Wonder Woman could save Narnia. Quote me on that.
Are you going to make that the title of this podcast?
Wonder Woman to the rescue. Greetings once again, Narnie Webbers. I'm Glumpuddle and welcome back to Talking Beasts. What you're about to hear is a conversation I had with Narnie Web Forum moderator Riotian a few days after we saw Wonder Woman, which opened a strong box office and general critical acclaim. So what does that have to do with Narnia? Well, I recently received this email from a listener named Indil. Indil writes, quote, I was listening to a recent podcast where you made a comment about being cynical and wanting a movie that is not cynical about right and wrong. I just saw Wonder Woman a couple days ago and was wondering what your thoughts are on it, considering those sentiments, end quote. You can email me at glumpuddle@narnieweb.com, by the way. So thanks for the message, Indil. So the issue I was talking about in the episode entitled How to Turn a Book into a Movie was that Hollywood today seems to be insecure about having characters that do the right thing simply because it is the right thing, as opposed to having slightly selfish or maybe more complicated motives. And I suspect that's why we see a lot of humor and a little wisecracking in superhero movies these days. And that's kind of what came to mind for me when I first saw Douglas Gresham mention that The Silver Chair will be full of, quote, humor and fun. And I have no idea what he meant by that, but it did kind of raise a little red flag in my mind. So that's what Riotian and I ended up talking about. And it sort of turned into a discussion of, also, are superheroes too complicated these days? Is that a bad thing? And certainly, we've come a long way since the 1970s Superman film, where he was simply here to fight for truth, justice, and the American way, and that was it. And Superman used to be a lot more popular than Batman, and that's certainly changed. And why is that? What does that mean? So in this conversation, sorry, we did go on a couple of rants on occasion, and it does get a little nerdy, but I do think the issues we discuss are very relevant to Narnia, especially as we anticipate more films. So even if you're not into superheroes, I hope you'll still get something out of this discussion. And also, at the end of the show, stay tuned for Stump a Narnie Webber, where I'm going to ask Riotian to answer a trivia question. What kind of animal was Moonwood? So we'll see if she gets that right. Hope you enjoy this discussion.
I used to want to save the world. This beautiful place. But the closer you get, the more you see the great darkness within.
We're up and rolling.
Okay.
So we can talk to each other.
Finally.
Finally.
We can stop saying, okay, let's save this actually, for later.
Now that we can actually be friends again, basically, instead of, oh, let's save this until there's microphones in front of us. By the way, thank you. It's just nice to not be the only person in the room wearing a Superman shirt that was nerdy enough to wear a Superman shirt to an audio podcast.
I mean, I had to. I couldn't just grab anything.
It will affect the conversation, I think.
Probably.
Okay, so are you ready to finally, after basically avoiding each other for like 3 or 4 days, to talk
right.
about the first movie in the DC Cinematic Universe that's actually kind of good?
Okay, well, of course you had to start it off that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I will say it's the first one that I will, without reservations, say that I liked.
Yeah, you and some other Narnie Webbers we know have some very complicated answers to, well, did you like that movie or not, basically. It's like, well, what do you mean by that exactly? But yeah, so wait, because you like the other ones with an asterisk?
Well, okay, I really didn't like Man of Steel, although I have seen it only the once. I like Batman v Superman with an asterisk. I will fully admit that it has flaws. I don't recommend it for everyone, but I thought it did some things right that I feel like for example, I will admit, like, the Batman that we saw in the fight scenes is the best live-action Batman I've seen yet, period.
In terms
of the fight scenes. I also liked that it was a Batman that wasn't afraid of, you know, like, I remember in the Christopher Nolan movies where they're like, oh, we have to justify him being able to turn his head in all that armor.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman...
Okay, so there's little... things like, oh, I like that bit, but
well, okay,
it's still a convoluted story and it makes no sense, and Superman is just so sad.
Oh,
all the time.
Superman was one of Lex Luthor was my least favorite part of that movie. Superman was probably my second least favorite, but there, like, I really liked Wonder Woman, and there were a couple of things that I thought I did think the movie got right, and
okay.
I I don't think it helps. I went into that movie with rock bottom expectations.
I did too, actually, honestly. And I came out going, okay, I guess it was watchable. But one thing I did like about it was I kind of liked the actress playing Wonder Woman. I thought her presence in the movie made no sense, but I liked the actress, and I was saying, okay, maybe Wonder Woman will have at least one cool thing about it. At least they'll have a cool actress in that role. But I would say most superhero movies just aren't good. They're just blockbusters, the same thing over and over. I know you know this, nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
But I keep going back because every so often you get something that makes it worthwhile. And Wonder Woman, I would say, is not, I don't know if it's a great movie, but it has a few things in it and a few scenes in particular that are truly great. First time I've really wanted to, and my wife will tell you, woot and chant and cheer and yes and get excited and really root for that protagonist and get excited. And it was I would overall say I liked Wonder Woman quite a bit. And so I'll just go ahead and shake your hand right now and say that it was basically everything you said it was going to be, and it was not remotely what I said it was going to be. So very happy to be wrong on that one.
Yeah, I was a little surprised when I saw you on Facebook and you're like, I don't remember exactly what you said, but you said I liked the movie, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Vindicated.
there's nothing in the trailer that made it look like anything other than, it's a superhero, but look, we're sad. We're really modern superheroes, which means we're sad. We have superpowers and we hate our lives for it. Darkness, no parents, all that stuff.
Right, and I am glad that
it's not that at all.
Wonder Woman had none of that. She was just, I almost get the feeling she almost didn't even realize just how powerful she was compared to normal people. She's just like, you know, I see something wrong in the world and it's my job to fix it.
And that's it. And it's that's one thing I really appreciated about it a lot compared to other superheroes is basically the thing that she's naive, but that's almost her superpower in a way.
Right.
Because she sees, I guess that was the thing it was for me. It was convicting to realize all the things that maybe I walk past on a daily basis just because I'm used to it. And I pull out my phone every morning and see terrible things happening in the world, and it's, wow, that's terrible, swipe left.
Right.
And there's a point where we get used to it, and Wonder Woman is not used to it because, context for those that know nothing about Wonder Woman, she's from, how do you say it?
Themyscira.
Okay, I'll leave it to you to bring that up. But she's from this, why don't you explain?
Well, it's, okay, basically, it's a hidden island where the Amazons have lived for thousands of years in secret.
And they're hidden from the rest of the world, in the middle of the ocean.
It's basically an island paradise of just women, Amazon warriors. And Diana has lived there her whole life.
After being sculpted by clay and brought to life by Zeus, supposedly.
Yeah.
And so basically she gets involved in... makes it to the outside world at some point, and this is her first time seeing the world at all, and it's during World War I, and all the suffering is something she's never experienced before. She's lived on this paradise, so she feels this, oh my gosh, got to do something about this because it's new to her. And to me, the movie is about, is she going to become cynical? Is she going to become desensitized as well, like everyone else? And because everyone else is kind of telling her, she has this very simple way of looking at things, complicated situations, and she just goes, no, you can't do this. Like the scene with all those bureaucrats who are like, oh, just do this.
Right.
And she's like, oh, in my world, I'm used to generals right there on the battlefield. Like, what's the magician's nephew? And they say, the first in every desperate charge, the last in every retreat.
Right.
And she comes, she has this old, knight's hero's way of looking at it, where it's generals charging into battle. And then she goes to World War I, and it's bureaucrats who are making the decisions. These old guys, like, oh, yeah, just go fight.
And speaking of the magician's nephew reference, one of the generals basically says, yeah, soldiers are expendable.
Yeah.
They're not us. The whole different rules for me.
Yeah, that don't apply to me. Uh-huh. And those are things that I don't like and you don't like about our world. The fact that happens a lot. But we're also used to it at the same time. And Wonder Woman, because she's never experienced it before, is not used to it.
Please slow down,
Diana. That's your leader? How could he say that? Believe that? And you, was your duty to simply give them a book?
No.
You didn't stand your ground. You didn't fight.
Because there was no chance of changing his mind.
This is Ares, and he's not going to allow a negotiation or a surrender. The millions of people you talked about, they will die.
We are going anyway.
You mean you were lying?
I'm a spy. That's what I do.
How do I know you're not lying to me right now?
I kind of saw the movie as being about, is she going to be, is she going to ultimately become cynical like the rest of the world around her, or is she going to keep those old-fashioned ideals of, you know, things like right and wrong and helping other people? And so how would you compare Wonder Woman's motivations to other superhero, well, I guess just to simplify things, we'll say movies, superhero movies.
Right.
Do you see her motivation as being different than other superheroes?
I do see it a little bit. In terms of, for one thing, I think it was the director who said this. I remember hearing in an interview somewhere where somebody pointed out that, you know, like Batman is kind of his motivation is to save Gotham, to try to right the wrongs in Gotham.
But it's for personal reasons usually.
Right.
It's like, well, it's because his parents died and now he's mad at crime and wants to stop it.
Right.
It's,
or they have a specific villain that is their enemy. Like even Captain America, when he started out, was going against Hydra. Whereas Wonder Woman, she was more, I mean,
when Captain America first wants to go to war, he just wants to do it. It seems like just because that's the right thing to do.
Right. I'm more referring to kind of how the premise is set up in general. Just that, like, I mean, Wonder Woman, spoiler alert, she does, you know, face villains, like specific villains. But her goal kind of overall, I'm not going to make any sense with this.
That's okay.
But, her goal overall is more to help humanity. It's uh-huh. It's less of a, you know,
it's bigger.
Yeah, it's bigger. It's not, I want to fight crimes. It's, I want to end wars.
Uh-huh.
It's not, you know, I want to take this villain out for some personal vendetta. It's,
yeah,
I want to stop this person because they are causing problems. And,
right.
And that's, you know, that's kind of a really interesting character, because so many other of the superheroes are more based on, like, protecting a specific city or...
Or they have personal issues to solve, like Batman. My parents died and I want to make sure no one else's parents die, basically. Or Spider-Man, who feels a sense of guilt because he could have used his powers to save his uncle, but he didn't, and then his uncle died for it. Okay, so he has this, oh, he's almost repaying a debt.
Right.
For a lot of it. And a lot of the Spider-Man, and this is something that he struggles with on a regular basis, too. Like, Spider-Man, he's always, oh, do I really want to do this? Or maybe I could just use these powers for myself. Whereas the Wonder Woman that I saw never wonders that.
Right. It's always, she's always got the kind of the...
Uh-huh.
I don't want to say the battle in front of her, but she's always got kind of the mission in front of her,
right.
The plan.
Uh-huh.
You know, she, like, I think, again, like I said, I don't think she's really quite aware of just how, it's almost like she doesn't think twice about how much more powerful she is around her.
That's what it is. So she's a simple, I know we've been using that word a lot. I don't know how much we normally like that word, but
I prefer straightforward.
Straightforward. Okay. We'll go with that. That she just wants to help humanity because,
right.
Well, why wouldn't she? That's the way I see it after one viewing, at least. And there's no having to concoct an explanation for why would she want to help people. It's more a question of why wouldn't she want to help
right.
people. I think it's refreshing to have a character that does it because this is clearly the right thing to do, and she can't just stand by and let this go on. And,
right.
and that's it. It's that simple. And it works because it's done with sincerity,
yes,
no irony. It's not, and I get the sense with a lot of the Marvel films that's why they have a lot of those wisecracks and one-liners every now and then, just
right.
to say, hey, you know, we're just kidding around here. Like, now the Marvel films take themselves seriously to some extent to have some character drama, but it's also, hey, all this stuff about right and wrong and justice. I mean, come on, we're just having fun here. And it was
right.
so nice to have a movie like Wonder Woman, very much in the spirit of the original Superman, where they don't wink at the camera at all. It's this is what she believes, and she's not going to apologize for it.
Right. And what you're saying kind of reminded me of, like, in Guardians of the Galaxy, in the first one, when the characters who are going to become the Guardians are kind of faced with, hey, by the way, the supervillain is threatening to destroy an entire planet with one of the Infinity Stones, and Rocket Raccoon actually asks Star-Lord, he's like, well, why do you care about this? And Star-Lord's like, because I'm one of the idiots who lives in this universe. and yes, that works for that character. And in that movie, it works because that's what those characters are. Is they
uh-huh.
are a bunch of, you know, an assassin, an alien who lost his family, you know, that kind of thing. They are a group of people who really don't have any reason to care about anybody else, and it's kind of endearing that they do eventually learn to care. But then that tone starts to get really old when they basically start to apply it to all of their heroes.
Yeah.
And then they have the same wisecrack in the middle of a fight. Like, if the fight isn't supposed to be the super dramatic point of the movie, you can almost guarantee that there's wisecracks going on.
Like, yeah, and maybe one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode was... I still don't know how to interpret this, but in the original announcement for Joe Johnston doing The Silver Chair, they mentioned, I don't have it in front of me, I guess I could pull up my phone and look at it, take 2 seconds, but in the original announcement saying Joe Johnston was going to direct The Silver Chair, it mentioned the humor, and as just one of the things, he can bring this, this, and this, and humor from the Chronicles of Narnia, which, look, obviously, Chronicles of Narnia, there's a sense of humor there. I'm not arguing there's nothing funny in Narnia. And the narrator, the sort of subtle, not quite there narrator of Narnia, does have a sense of humor. There are funny things. But the fact that they chose to highlight that as one of the things that Joe's going to do made me wonder, well, what do they mean by that? And I immediately thought of DC and Marvel movies. DC has, they've tried to make theirs all dark and serious and there's been this, I know why our movies aren't working. We've got to make them funny, like Marvel. And so I did wonder if with The Silver Chair, if they were going to say, well, we've got to inject some humor. And there wasn't enough humor in the Walden movies. That's why they failed. And so, although I don't know if that's what Joe meant by that. It may have meant, or he didn't say that. Of course, it was some, you know, the thing was Gresham or someone else wrote the announcement. Hello. That's my wife. just taking over the living room. I'm going to finish this thought. I'm going to do it. So humor. I've got it. Oh yeah. So I was worried they're looking at the Walden movies and basically saying, okay, what can we do differently? Well, what if we made them kind of wisecracky and not take this up too seriously? And it's a tricky balance because like the original Superman movie, when did you last see that? Did you see it recently?
We don't actually have it at home, so okay. I haven't seen it in a few years.
Yeah, the thing about the original Superman that I think Wonder Woman captures pretty well is it's a fun movie, and there's funny stuff in it, but it's also really happening. It's not a farce.
Right. Right. They're not looking at the camera and saying, by the way, you don't have to take this seriously, or by the way... Sorry, Ant-Man. Tank driving out of a building that, you know, you shouldn't take that seriously. This is all superhero fun.
Right.
And I think it's important to note that one of the things that made Wonder Woman more appealing to me than the other DC movies is that Wonder Woman did have a sense of humor. I mean, yes, there was quite a bit of Chris Pine's character, Steve Trevor, a lot of the humor was him kind of going... Right. The situation is crazy, but it wasn't him saying, oh, the situation is so silly, laugh at it. It was more just he was totally out of his depth.
Yeah.
You know, he was, this suave, the actor who played Captain Kirk in a scenario where he is just completely in over his head. And that's what made it funny.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what the distinction is because I like that stuff. And what's the distinction between where do I feel Marvel crosses the line? A lot of the Marvel movies I like, but where do I feel they cross the line into? Maybe it's just... I feel like there's a point where they're trying to say all this stuff about truth and justice and honor. Like, look, almost saying, hey, audience, you can laugh at us a little bit. It's okay. Like, we're in on the joke with you. We know. Whereas I think that Wonder Woman and the original Superman, you're not supposed to laugh at it.
You're supposed to laugh with it on occasion.
I don't even know if it's – I guess it's – Yeah, I guess that might be a way to say it. It's funny. We look at the original Superman now and – that was sort of the first serious superhero movie. And we look at it now and it's like, what do you mean? It's so campy. But what we had before that was the Batman TV series where it was a parody. And they were saying, look at how dumb this is. And Superman, although it's fun, it's a fun movie. And it enjoys the fact that it has a guy in a cape flying around saving people. And that's cool. It's not saying this is a joke. And I'm even just sensitive to it because I feel like, that's maybe today we feel like that's the only way you can... do a movie where people are really standing up for what is right and have a sense of right and wrong. The only way you can do it is if you say, hey, we're kind of joking here. And that's how, I wonder if that's how Marvel feels. And so that's where Wonder Woman was kind of refreshing.
Right. And even, you know, Captain America, the Winter Soldier is my gold standard period for any superhero movie, as you well know, because I won't shut up about it.
Yep.
Won't. But but even that movie does have a moment where, slight spoiler alert if you haven't seen Captain America the Winter Soldier, but towards the end of the movie when he makes his speech over the SHIELD intercom, and, you know, it's a very impassioned speech about kind of figuring out what side you're on and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I saw the movie, Sam Wilson, the Falcon, makes a wise crack about how, like, you know, did you write that down or did you make that all off the top of your head? And to a certain degree, it was kind of like, you know, a compliment towards Cap's inspiring nature. But at the same time, it was a little mood breaking for me, because it's kind of like,
because maybe you were actually a little bit caught up in the speech and affected by it and the things he was saying, and then the wisecrack is sort of that was a big dramatic speech, wasn't it? That, you know, just like in a movie, that was a little silly. Well, why can't he just make a real impassioned speech? Why can't he really feel really strongly about something? And no, this is wrong. And why does the movie have to kind of apologize for it with a joke?
Yeah. And to be fair, that one is one of the tamer ones. I feel like I do feel like the Marvel movies have, to a certain degree, I almost feel like they feel pressure to, you know, because there's, I mean, like, people seem, for some reason, seem to look at the superhero genre like, you can have two kinds of movies. You can have the current Marvel formula franchise, or you can have the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight trilogy.
Exactly. It's one or the other.
Yeah. And that is, as somebody who's been a superhero fan since I was 11,
it's not true.
It drives me insane.
Uh-huh.
When I watch a superhero movie, again, I am a huge superhero fan, mm-hmm. you know, both universes, primarily DC.
Uh-huh.
But when I watch anything superhero related, I do not want somebody to wink at the camera and uh-huh. say, by the way, this is all kind
right.
of silly.
Uh-huh.
I want you to...
I want to get lost in it most of the time.
Yes. I want you to look at... Because to me, it's like, you have this world that is basically limited only by imagination uh-huh. and continuity to a certain degree.
Uh-huh.
But just roll with it, you know?
Uh-huh.
Don't try to say, oh, your imagination is silly. Just say, okay, this is a world where... You know, there's a team that includes a flying alien who is as strong as he ever needs to be for any situation, uh-huh. an immortal Amazon princess with magic armor and a magic lasso.
That's the way it is.
And a super rich guy who is basically a ninja and a detective uh-huh. with every gadget you could ever want all rolled into one.
And maybe most insane of all, most, oh my gosh, this is clearly a fantasy, has a clear sense of right and wrong.
Yes.
And that might be the most absurd thing in you know, to have something like that.
Yeah, that's actually...
That might be the most difficult thing to sell to somebody, I think, as really being real. And I think that's... Marvel's fine with giving the raccoon a machine gun, but I don't think they feel confidence. But could we make them believe that there's somebody... Well, they did have Captain America, which that was a pretty good example.
Right.
Of this.
But
who just believes something because, well, this is the right thing to do, and that's all it is. And I think that whether that's true or not, I think that's something that people seem to be hungry for, and Hollywood doesn't seem to I think they're behind on the times. They don't quite, well, maybe Wonder Woman, maybe they're catching up, but I think people are hungry for, and this is what I think the Narnia movies can be. People are hungry for movies, whether they agree with it or not, where they can watch characters that really believe something is right, just because, not because their parents died, not because they feel guilty or they have some duty to something, but just because they really think that's the right thing to do. And I think Narnia can give us that simple outlook that I think that when you do it right, it's when you do it wrong. Oh, it's cheesy,
right?
You know, and that when you don't believe it, it's cheesy. In Wonder Woman, mostly because of, how do you say her name? Gal Gadot, is
it
T silent? Is the T silent?
It is not silent. I never pronounce her name correctly.
Gal Gadot, who plays Wonder Woman, I'm not saying she's as good, but just like Christopher Reeve as Superman, the best superhero performance ever.
I would disagree with you there.
Well, who's your favorite? Oh, if you like
Chris Evans.
Oh, I'm shocked. Okay.
Chris Evans as Captain America.
Okay. Well, I will say Chris Evans is good as Captain America for a similar reason as Christopher Reeve, in that both of them believe in truth, justice, and the American way, and they really believe it. There's even
right. Oh, and you believe what they say when
uh-huh.
they say it.
There's even a moment in the original Superman where Lois Lane is interviewing Superman and says, "So why are you here?" And he says, "I'm here for truth, justice, and the American way." And she kind of laughs and is like, "You're going to fight, you're going to end up fighting every elected official in this country. And we kind of think, oh, it's going to be a joke. And then Superman goes, well, I'm sure you don't really believe that, Lois, with complete sincerity. And whether you agree with that, you know, simple kind of idealized Boy Scout view or not, it's so nice to see someone with superpowers. He really believes it. And kind of a similar thing with Chris Evans playing Steve Rogers, Captain America.
Right.
He's not being ironic. He completely believes, no, truth, justice, laying down your life for, you know, other people and keeping others safe. And just because, no tragic backstory, just because.
Yeah.
We'll continue with our discussion shortly, but first, here's your C.S. Lewis Minute.
I'm William O'Flaherty. This is a C.S. Lewis Minute. A successful writer in a number of areas, C.S. Lewis actually dreamed of accomplishing something that in reality became an early failure for him. When Lewis was only 10, he wrote his first poem, and for nearly the next 20 years, his main ambition was to become a poet. In fact, before his 21st birthday, his first published work was a poetry book. It was called Spirits in Bondage. It was released in 1919, over 30 years before his first Narnia story hit the shelves. Dimer was Lewis's only other poetry book published in his lifetime. It came out 7 years later in 1926. He did, however, continue to write short poems throughout his life, and many were printed in a variety of places. Also, some of his poetry is seen in other fictional works he wrote. Learn more by getting a copy of the Collected Poems of C.S. Lewis that came out in 2015. Learn more about C.S. Lewis by visiting my website, EssentialCSLewis.com.
We've been talking about doing this podcast for a while, so I have been thinking about this a little bit, and I've also been thinking about this for a long time also because of the...
Whereas I haven't thought about it at all. It's all completely on the fly. Just thinking about it right now.
But there's been a recurring thing going on, even in comic book, actually, especially in comic book circles, where there's just that this idea of Superman is a boring character.
Uh-huh. And my Boy Scout.
Right. My brother.
He's too good.
My brother, who is about as obsessed with superheroes as I am, has pointed out that Superman used to constantly sell off the shelves. You know, they made 4 movies based off of him.
Uh-huh.
Back with, you know, with Christopher Reeve.
2 of which were not terrible.
I've actually only seen the first one, so I will bow to your opinion there. And even recently, he did have a successful animated TV show. Not as successful as the Batman one, but he did have his own TV show.
Which is okay.
Yeah, and it's just the idea
changed.
That he's inherently boring doesn't make sense, because he's been successful for 75 plus years.
Well,
so he can't be the idea that he's inherently boring is kind of silly.
Well, he's obviously he's at, but something's changed in the past couple decades. Superman is definitely not as popular. I think it used to be there was Superman, then there was that other guy that wears the black cape instead of a red cape. Oh, and he doesn't have powers. Isn't that interesting? But it's completely flipped around, where Batman is basically everybody loves Batman. Who doesn't like Batman, right? And
right.
Now Superman, and it's been cool for the past couple of decades to not like Superman. And I went through that phase in my teens, by the way. But I've come around. But now something has changed. And I think that's a fascinating question to ask. What has changed? Why is Superman now considered irrelevant and childish, whereas before he was cool? And what's happening in the world that Batman's kind of... You know, he's a dark knight, right? That whole title refers to that he's basically good, but maybe he does morally questionable things. And he's very, you know, complicated, you know, situations. Whereas, why do we like that so much better than a couple decades ago when I think we were more about Superman and his truth, justice, the American way? What's changed?
Well, it's a web series that... Oh my goodness, it's like 10 years old now. I feel old. But there's a web...
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out 12 years ago, the movie.
Stop.
Okay.
Well, this Saturday is my 13th Narnia Web anniversary. I was 13 when I joined.
It's your unlucky year. So hopefully that doesn't... Bad Silver Chair movie comes out, we know who to blame.
Well, that's not going to come out until next year, and that'll be 14.
Okay.
But by that point, I'll
Fair
have
enough.
Been a Narnia Webber for
you
half
win that
my
one.
Life.
You win that one. Wow.
But... but there's a web series. It's It's the web series is called After Hours by just some random guy. And I don't know if you'll be able to include
yeah, with
this
the action figures and all that. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Say somebody else.
I'm a Marvel and I'm a DC.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he actually, you know, they started out as just silly parodies of the Mac PC ads. But then he actually went into an arc about Superman. And one of the things he says is that, you know, when Superman was popular, he was someone to aspire to be.
Uh-huh.
He was, you know, the very essence of goodness. He had all this power, but he chose to use it for truth, justice, the American way. He chose uh-huh. to use it to defend a planet that wasn't even his own. It was the one that adopted him.
Without needing a tragic backstory. I mean, I know his earthly dad died and everything, but it's not like that was this huge traumatic event. I mean, obviously, it was traumatic, but it wasn't like Batman where I've got to go beat all the bad guys.
Slight nerd rage moment. His earthly dad dies in the movies. Actually, depending on the continuity, he doesn't necessarily die in the comics. And I prefer it when Jonathan Kent is still alive. But
I like Jonathan Kent dying because I like the fact that Superman knows what it's like to lose someone close. And I like the fact that Jonathan Kent dies of something like a heart attack in most continuities. It's something that Superman, and this is kind of what the approach the movie takes. Even with all his power, he couldn't save his dad. Like it was just something like a heart attack. I think it reminds Superman that he's not God. And I think that's what keeps him humble. And that's Superman being so all powerful, but still having a strong sense of humility is one of the defining parts of the character. And in real life, and a person with that much power, it's scary. To think of someone having that much power is a scary, scary thing. If you want evidence of that, watch Man of Steel, basically.
Right.
That's why I can't stand Man of Steel, because I walk out of that going, oh my gosh, it would be. I'm so glad we don't have aliens that look like humans that are super strong. When I watch the Christopher Reeve Superman from 1979... For a moment, it makes me forget about how cynical outlook I often have on humanity. And I look at Christopher Reeve and how he's all powerful, but he's also so humble at the same time. And his performance makes me believe it. And I forget for 2 hours how cynical I am. And I would love Narnia to do because the Narnia books do the same thing.
Right.
And I would love the Narnia movies to do the same thing going forward.
People used to aspire to be Superman,
uh-huh.
but then characters like Spider-Man came along who were very relatable, you know, who,
mm-hmm.
you know, why aspire to be Superman when it's so easier to relate to Spider-Man?
So is that bad that we'd rather relate to heroes than aspire to be them? I don't know.
Well,
I certainly don't think, Spider-Man should not, even though Superman's my favorite superhero for all the reasons I've stated, it's not like I think that, Spider-Man should not exist. Characters like that shouldn't exist. And Batman shouldn't exist. I still like those characters.
Right. And I do, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, honestly, as much as I like Superman and Wonder Woman, Batman would probably rank above them on my favorite superheroes list.
Uh-huh.
But I think to
me... forgiven. No one's perfect.
But to me, part of it is that we do want a certain sense of variety. Like, I wouldn't want every superhero to be Superman, because then Superman loses what makes him special.
Uh-huh.
Just like I don't want every superhero to be Wonder Woman, then she would lose what makes her special. I want variety, you know?
Uh-huh.
I like the idea of a team, you know, that's one of the reasons why I like the idea of the Justice League so much, is that the Justice League, even more so than the Avengers, the Justice League all started out as their own heroes who... And especially since, because of the time they were made in, they did all have a sense of, you know, standing up for what's right, for protecting the innocent, for
mm-hmm.
avenging the criminal, or
mm-hmm.
avenging injustices.
Uh-huh.
And they all were their own entity, where, you know, Green Lantern is a space cop, as opposed to, Aquaman, who is the king of a kingdom, and he chooses mm-hmm. to come help the surface world in addition to his own kingdom, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Right.
So I think to a certain degree, the kind of trend towards dark Batman, guilt-stricken Spider-Man,
uh-huh.
you know, Tony Stark dealing with his
and now
alcohol issues.
Guilt-stricken Superman as well in Man
yeah.
of Steel. And that's all we know about Superman. There's this vague sense that he's sad and guilty, and that's the only thing we know about him, basically, after two movies.
Yeah.
Yuck.
And again, Superman is not my favorite. Superman is one of my least favorite parts of those movies, and that's
uh-huh.
one of the reasons why I like Batman v Superman, is that Superman doesn't talk very
much.
Well,
since he only has like 40 lines in Batman versus Superman. I was going to say, so you hate Superman and Batman versus Superman? That's a pretty big criticism. But then I was like, well, then again, he's hardly in the movie, so never mind.
I don't hate him. I'm disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just, he saves people, and the Christopher Reeve Superman saves people with this, he's happy to do it. In fact, I know in Superman 2, he, you know, gets rid of his powers for a while, but that's part of his journey in that movie, and it's fine in that movie. Actually doing something because you really want to do it, even though it involves sacrifice, you actually enjoy doing, I don't know, to that extent, it was, I don't know, would be nice to see that come back, basically.
Right. Well, and I think another thing, too, is that, and this is something else I've been thinking about because we've been talking about it, is I think part of it, too, is how you've set up the conflict. Like,
between?
Just the story conflict. Like, for example,
Batman versus Superman, you mean?
Yeah, just in general.
Oh, okay.
Like, in the Christopher Reeves movie, I mean, Lex Luthor was, I mean, yes, he was a supervillain, but they didn't,
he's only in the third act.
Well, and he's also taken as a serious threat, is another thing. And I don't mean that in a, you know, in a The Dark Knight's Joker type of sense where it's like, oh, Joker's just going to kill everybody if he isn't stopped. It was, you know, they put Superman in a scenario where, you know, he was, you know, the shining light versus Lex Luthor's craven greediness. And it was, you know, it was very clear good and evil. And we enjoy seeing Lex Luthor get defeated because he's such an obviously bad guy.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying that villains can't have more nuance than that. And actually, this is going to get into spoiler territory, so I don't know if
I think we're at this point, we're so close. Let's go and make this officially a spoiler-free episode. Are you okay with that? And
okay,
then we can stop the microphones and talk spoilers for Wonder Woman.
All right. Well, then I'll just say that with Wonder Woman. One thing that I think Wonder Woman did very well was it kept the conflict very, I mean, it was good versus evil, but at the same time, it wasn't as simple as the Germans are all, you know, evil Nazis.
Yeah.
There are Germans in the movie who are portrayed as, you know, they're portrayed as, and I think that's one of the reasons why World War One was a good choice, despite the fact that in the comics, it's World War II.
And they call it the war to end all wars, which is what Wonder Woman wants.
Right. But I think that's one of the reasons is because World War One is one of those really gray area conflicts where, and the whole reason it started and the whole reason it ended was basically politics.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really messy war with
not quite as glorious or romantic of a reason that Wonder Woman might be used to of why you go to war and fight for your people.
It forced us to get a more nuanced idea of Wonder Woman's character because she quickly discovered it wasn't as simple as, you know, bad guys, good guys, there's a sharp line dividing them.
Uh-huh.
She had to realize that, you know, she's kind of the nuances of humanity, the good and the bad. And that's why, I think that's part of the reason why we can still take her seriously, in a sense, is that, you know, she is portrayed as being so straightforward, so good.
Uh-huh.
But when she's challenged, she doesn't just kind of go, you know, the move, you know, she just, I'm trying to think of the best way
to
say this.
She's challenged. Like, when is she challenged in the movie, would you say?
I have a hard time thinking of an example without going into spoiler territory.
Yeah, so maybe I'll just ask you this. Do you think that, without spoiling anything, because like I said, one of the central conflicts of the movie is, I think you have this naive person, Wonder Woman, and that's almost her superpower, the fact that she's naive. Is she going to be corrupted and become cynical and, oh, humanity is just not worth it and everybody's evil when you come right down to it? Or is she going to keep the value she has now, which is, no, we have to save people and everyone's worth saving? What happens to her at the end? Because I think if I'm listening to you from the point of view of someone listening to this and they've never seen the movie, it kind of sounds like, oh, so she goes into it thinking that truth, justice, black and white, you know, right and wrong. But then by the end, she wises up and learns that, no, it's all more complicated than that. There's so much gray. And does she get corrupted at the end and just cynicism, basically?
This might be a bit of a spoiler, but I think she's forced to look at cynicism in the face. She's not allowed to keep her naive view of the world of simple, you know, how simple it is to draw the lines in the sand. She's forced to look that straight in the eye. And then she's forced to say, okay, you exist. I need to learn how to deal with you.
Uh-huh.
She stares the cynicism in the face and she says, okay, well, I'm just going to have to adapt my optimism to be more realistic. It's not that she has to get colder and darker. Uh-huh. It's that she has to get wiser.
It's almost more heroic after witnessing all the atrocities. By the way, there's some stuff that I thought, man, was pushing that PG-13 rating in this movie with the war violence. Just a couple of brief moments, but I think it was good. It helps seeing the horror of war from her perspective. But after everything she's seen, she still says, I'm still going to have this sense of right and wrong. And I'm still going to, as cheesy as it sounds, fight for those that, you know, can't fight for themselves. And I'm still going to continue doing that despite what I've seen. I don't necessarily see it as she's got her head in the clouds, although she can kind of fly at the end, I guess. So we don't really see her fly, do we? She just jumps a lot. But I do see it as she's learned something, but is still standing up for what her beliefs, what she believes, even after what she's witnessed. Right. I think that almost makes her more of a hero.
What are you?
I am Diana of Themyscira, daughter of Hippolyta.
In the name of all that is good,
your wrath upon this world is over.
I'm trying to think, is this in the Narnia movies at all? This sort of, I should be specific, this sort of simple, well, this is the right thing to do. Kinda. I mean, like, you think about Peter in the books when he's told that Obenas Kerperavel, you're going to be High King, and he doesn't really have this, well, I don't know, because I'm the older brother and I'm not my family, and I just don't know if I can do it. And Peter in the books is, okay, I guess I'm the king, and there's no, well, should we leave or anything. He just does it.
Well, I think another thing too is that, like, when I was a kid, at least, you know, obviously I didn't get to have grand adventures like that when I was a kid. Well, actually, no, secretly I went to Narnia. Oh. But I always pictured myself as, you know, when I was a kid, I always thought, yeah, you would go into that kind of situation and you just do the right thing because it's the right thing. It wasn't until I got older that I started, you know,
Wait a second. Would they do that? You know?
And also, you know, like, kind of in a sense, like, you know, I've always had fantasies about, like, you know, when I was a kid, I would want to go to Narnia or to a world like that and explore mm-hmm. a magical kingdom.
Uh-huh.
So I got a little older, I got a little more into the superhero kick, and I will admit that when I was a teenager, the kind of more vengeance type heroes appealed to me to a certain degree, because that's when I started to get to that point where you kind of start to realize how messed up the world is.
And uh-huh.
it's kind of like, you know, you want the heroes that can go. You don't even necessarily want to protect the innocents. You want to see the heroes that can go out and punch the bad guys.
It makes you
guys
feel like a grown-up, I think. They go, oh, but I'm above that Superman Boy Scout. I'm speaking from my own experience. Above that Superman Boy Scout. I know the world is more complicated than that. So it kind of makes you feel like a grown-up, I think. But hopefully you can be old enough to start reading fairy tales again eventually.
Exactly.
And I just don't think we've gotten that sense in the movies. And, like, throughout Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, how many times do they bring up the question of the kids saying, well, what if we just went home? And we have to explain why would they stay. They do that once briefly in the book, but it's not this. I feel like it's this ongoing thing. And then in Prince Caspian, and maybe they were just desperate for finding a way to create more drama. But in the book, Peter, I haven't come to replace you, Caspian. I'm here to put you into the throne. And we don't question, of course, that's what the High King would do. But in the movie, well, no, wouldn't there be a power struggle? Wouldn't they want the power for themselves? Is more of the assumption.
And I think part of it too is that I kind of get, especially with Voyage of the Dawn Treader, I get a bit more of I hate this word, but kind of almost more of a tween-teen marketing push. You know,
movie.
Yeah, like almost like they were trying to make this more for the young adult audience.
Oh, yeah, yeah, maybe.
I think if the next Narnia movie is more of a children's movie, not in the patronize, talk down to your audience sense, but in the sense of something like a Pixar movie where they just kind of say, you know, we're going to look at this from an imaginative perspective. We're going to look at this from a story perspective. And, you know, Pixar's been doing it long enough that they know that they can do that and the audience will follow.
And then in the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, in the book, there's a great example of Caspian seeking the Seven Lords, not because there's any reason he needs to. There's nothing in it for him.
Except that he made the promise.
But why did he make that promise? Because he felt it was his duty to go find the Seven Lords. That he didn't even do it wrong. His uncle did it. He didn't even do it.
Right.
And he felt a sense of responsibility. Wow, that's so cool. That's so honorable. And they do uphold that in the movie, but you forget about it so quickly because it quickly becomes about trying to defeat the evil green mist that's going to, you know, take us over or whatever. So you quickly and they don't even care about the lords at that point. They just care about the swords.
Right. The lords get basically completely forgotten until the end of the movie.
So you really lose the sense of, and you know, if you're listening and you like The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, thank you so much for listening. And please, you know, obviously, if you disagree, post a comment. I'd love to hear what you have to say. But kind of my feeling of it was that you could like break down the script and say, okay, you see, technically there's no ulterior motives and he's doing it for honor, but it doesn't feel that way. You know, it's, oh, get the sword. They don't care about the Seven Lords anymore. And even why would we want to go to Ascent Country? Well, they literally say, well, you know, well, we're here. Why wouldn't you want to go to Ascent Country? Come on.
More of the humor undercutting.
Yeah,
the emotional...
exactly. I never remember questioning that in the book. Why wouldn't I want to go to Ascent Country?
Well, I think it helps too that, in the books, Aslan is a, you know, he's a rich character. He's, uh-huh. I mean, he's more than just
that's
the
true.
Powerful Deus Ex Machina.
Uh-huh.
He's more than just
very
the,
well, children, very well.
Yeah,
yes.
he's more than the Obi-Wan giving them advice.
Uh-huh.
He's a character. He's a character.
And we see so many different sides
love.
To him.
Yeah.
We see... I love the scene where Jill meets Aslan and we see so many different sides of him. We see him being stern with her and disapproving. Then we see him being very patient with her and wanting to help her. We see him saying, I've swallowed up girls and boys, women and men, kings and emperors, cities and realms. And wonder, did he really do that? And so we see so many sides of Aslan in that.
Yeah.
So he's not just this, yes, children, very good mentor. So that helps. That's why we want to go to Aslan's country. We don't question
yes.
it. Whereas in the movie, Aslan is... You always feel like in all three movies, increasingly so, they didn't quite know what to do with, we should move on, I guess. But.
Yeah. Well, and the thing to me is that I think the biggest problem with the Narnia movies in general, all three of them, is that, you know, they kind of assumed, oh, we're a fantasy action adventure movie.
Yes.
And then they kind of put way too much emphasis on the action, which is why all of them are about saving Narnia in a much more overt way than
uh-huh.
I think any of the books really are.
And I think that probably kind of tends you towards we have to add conflict and make things difficult and we have to...
Right. We have to add a green mist because otherwise there is no possible way you can say that Voyage of the Dawn Treader is about saving the world.
Well, like, why would we... Because we can't just have a whole movie about Caspian wanting to go find the Seven Lords because it was the right thing to do. I mean, come on, who's going to buy that? We have to make it, it's about defeating this evil green mist. At least that's cool looking.
Yeah.
At least that'll sell DVDs and plush toys and look cool in trailers. And so,
yeah, that turned out.
There's definitely some cynicism there. And I would love to see in future movies more confidence in this is a movie about people that, like me and Jill, I know Aslan scares her, but
right.
There is a sense of duty there, I think, among the characters. And certainly with Puddle Glum, we got to go find the Prince Rillian. That's what we've got to do. Why wouldn't we want to do that? Because Prince Rillian is missing and. It's sad that Caspian is missing his only heir. And so I would love to see not so much cynicism about that in future
yeah.
movies. That's kind of what this all
right.
kind of comes to.
Yeah.
So just that little bit of Wonder Woman, if Wonder Woman could save Narnia, quote me on that.
Are you going to make that the title of this podcast?
Wonder Woman, save Narnia. Wonder Woman to the rescue. So there you go. There's your Wonder Woman thoughts and analysis on the Narnia Web podcast. You're welcome. this felt good for us to get this out of our system since we're doing this all the time without microphones. So
yes.
Anyway.
And then everybody else in the room is just kind of like, so when are they going to wind down? It's been like 3 hours.
Well, now that you mention it, enough of this. Let's stump a Narnia Webber.
Oh, yay!
Yeah, guess who? That would be you.
Yes, I'm totally, yeah.
Okay, so.
I apologize in advance for butchering whatever question I'm given.
Oh, good. Okay, so we have the apology now, so we don't have to wait for it. That's good. So interestingly, I was got this. This question comes from, was submitted by Wolf Loversk, who I never, I see you on the forum all the time. I never tried to say your name out loud until now. So I just kind of said Wolf. You know how your mind just kind of buzzes over. You don't really think about it.
Right.
So this is just now my first time trying to say it out loud and realize, oh, Wolf Loversk. Anyway, so Wolf Loversk submitted this question. And I'd already been thinking about So what's something about superpowers I could ask? Or something along those lines. And then lo and behold, I saw this question from Wolf and thought, okay, this will work. So in the last battle, Jewel tells Jill Pohl about Moonwood, a beast who could sit by Cauldron Pool under the thunder of the great waterfall and hear what men spoke in whispers at Cair Paravel.
Oh, darn, I was hoping that was the question.
Nope. Your question, what kind of animal was Moonwood?
Oh, he was...
And you can think about this for a second in case you want the audience. It sounds like you've got it. But so in case you want... But you have to make this interesting so the audience will play along with us again. So in the last battle... What's the answer?
He's a hare, isn't he?
Yes. Moonwood is a hare. You got it. All right. You see? You got it.
Because I've always had this... That was described. I always get this image of, you know, this cheeky little rabbit with gigantic ears just laying an ear down and, like, smirking because he can hear what's going on in Cair Paravel. I just have that very vivid image in my head.
Well, they've got to make that Rogue One-style movie eventually about...
Please, no.
Moonwood the hare, a Narnia story. Anyway, you see, you did it. You see, you were so cynical about your ability to get this question right all this time. And now look, restored to hope.
Remember, one of the questions was, what are the names of the 9 fawns that are mentioned in the Dancing Lawn? And I'm just like, there are fawns mentioned in that part?
If you want to submit a question to try to stump a Narnia Webber, please send an email to stump@narniaweb.com. Please put stump in the title. Do not include the answer. You might want to include the source, but please do not include the answer. So thank you very much for bearing with us as we rambled on. I'm hoping, and please give some feedback about what you thought of this kind of going off the beaten path. And should we maybe do some more things like this in the future, or if you had quite enough? So thank you very much.
Because trust us, there's more where
we could go on.